morbid symptom. The real issue is the economic and political system of this country, and that's called capitalism. This is an issue of reorganizing society. Because right now, in this shift that is happening, where the world that we knew is dying, and the new world is attempting to be born, is struggling to be born, we need midwives to foster, to nurture, to bring that new world into existence.
That's Claudia de la Cruz, and this is Alternative Radio.
I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I am a political prisoner. I never thought I would become a political prisoner in the United States, a country where laws are supposedly respected, where freedom of speech is protected, where one was supposedly has the right to speak out, to protest, to denounce injustice.
From church sanctuaries to ICE detention, immigrant rights activist Jeanette Vizguera speaks out from an immigration jail in Colorado 2 months after she was arrested by ICE. We'll air excerpts of Latino USA's interview with her. Maria Hinojosa is the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who got into the jail. Plus, we'll look at what's being called the Mount Everest of corruption. How President Trump's personally profiting off the presidency through various crypto schemes. We'll speak to Public Citizen's Rob Weissman, who recently protested outside a dinner hosted by Trump for the top spenders on Trump's meme coin.
America is not for sale!
America is not for sale!
America is not for sale because you can't have a functioning democracy and have the presidency sale.
Plus, the Trump administration's reached an agreement with Boeing to drop criminal prosecutions over the fatal crashes of two 737 MAX jets, which together killed all 346 people on board. Families of victims are condemning the deal. We'll speak with one of them, a mother who lost her daughter. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip have killed at least 15 people since dawn, part of an intensifying onslaught that displaced 180,000 Palestinians in just 10 days. On Tuesday, 8 people were killed when Israel struck the home of Palestinian journalist Osama al-Arbid in northern Gaza. He survived the strike and was filmed being pulled from the rubble of the house. Israel's continuing attacks came as Gaza's hunger crisis deepened. Hungry families in Gaza City report they're going without meals as they have yet to see any of the trickle of humanitarian aid allowed by Israel to cross into Gaza.
There's no flour and no food to feed the children, nor the adults. Everyone is hungry. No one is eating. No one is eating. If you find a kilo of rice today to prepare, you won't find it tomorrow. You would have to divide it over 2 days and feed the children little by little.
On Tuesday, Israeli soldiers opened fire on hungry and exhausted residents of the southern city of Rafah as they rushed to receive packages of food. Palestinian media reports at least 3 people were killed, 46 wounded in the chaos. The gunfire rang out after thousands of Palestinians who'd spent hours crowded into fence cages in the hot sun surged toward a distribution point set up by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, a controversial aid group backed by Israel with the support of U.S. private military contractors. It was the group's first day of operations. A United Nations spokesperson on Tuesday called the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation a distraction from what's needed to prevent a humanitarian catastrophe. This is Juliet Tuma of the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees.
The needs are 500 to 600 trucks at the minimum that should go into Gaza, loaded with supplies, not only food, but also medicine, medical supplies, vaccines for children, fuel, water, and other basics for people's survival. And we're very, very, very far from reaching that target.
In Massachusetts, protesters holding a 24-hour vigil for Gaza in Harvard Square, reading the names of Palestinians killed in Israel's assault on the Strip.
Rasha Muhammad Rafid Al-Hamidi, Bashra Ramza Imad Al-Shaid, Dana Atam Yusuf Dolal, Ghada Iyad Subhayyeh Al-Jihal Salem.
Protesters held banners that said they all have names. Officials in Gaza say Israel's assault and starvation campaign has killed more than 61,700 Palestinians. In Indianapolis, protesters gathered at the Indy 500 parade Saturday, demanding the U.S. pressure Israel to stop starving Gaza. Malka Bird is with Jewish Voice for Peace, which helped organize the demonstration.
We need to break the siege. We need food, medicine, and clean water going into Gaza immediately. So anything you can do, any people you have, any congregation, any collection of people that you have who can be moved into action, we are obligated to move them into action.
Humanitarian groups warn Sudan is on the brink of a public health catastrophe, as Sudanese officials have reported at least 2,700 cholera infections and 172 deaths in the past week alone. Most of the cases are in the state of Khartoum, where access to clean water and electricity has been severely disrupted due to drone strikes blamed on rapid support forces and intensifying fighting with the Sudanese army. The region's water treatment stations are out of service as the strikes have caused electricity outages, forcing local residents to turn to unsafe water sources. Cholera is caused by ingesting contaminated water or food and can kill a person within hours if left untreated. More than 2 years of war has pushed Sudan's healthcare system to the breaking point, leading to what international groups describe as the world's largest displacement and hunger crisis. The Trump administration's halted the processing of visas for international students as it prepares to require additional social media vetting for every applicant. A cable issued by Secretary of State Marco Rubio Tuesday orders U.S. embassies and consulates to halt interviews with prospective students until further notice. This comes after the Trump administration revoked the visas of international students who've spoken out in favor of Palestinian rights. Maryland Democratic Congressmember Glenn Ivey said Tuesday he was denied access to meet with Kilmar Abrego-Garcia during a recent visit to El Salvador. Abrego-Garcia was wrongfully sent to the maximum security mega prison in El Salvador, SECAT, in March. The Maryland father has since been transferred to a different prison. Ivey's attempted visit came as pressure continues to mount for Abrego-Garcia's release and return to the United States to reunite with his family. Ivey shared this message on social media.
We came here to visit him today, and now they're telling us we got to go all the way back to San Salvador to get a permit. That's ridiculous. We ought to have a chance to come in and visit. They knew we were coming. They knew why we were coming, and they know we have the right to do this. So they need to just cut the crap, let us get in there and have a chance to see him and talk with him. We got his lawyer here. We got somebody from the unions here to talk with him. Let us in. Stop playing games. Let us have a chance to talk with him.
The Supreme Court in April ruled the Trump administration was obligated to facilitate Abrego-Garcia's return to the United States. In more immigration news, the Trump administration's ordered the removal of a 4-year-old girl from Mexico, despite the child's immediate risk of death if she loses the medical treatment she's been receiving in the United States. The girl came to the U.S. with her parents, who also face expulsion and were granted permission to live in the country under humanitarian grounds in 2023. The little girl, identified only by her initials, SGV, has been receiving care for her short bowel syndrome at Children's Hospital, Los Angeles. One of the girl's physicians said if her treatment is interrupted, she could die in a matter of days. Here in New York, immigration advocates are demanding the release of a 20-year-old Venezuelan asylum seeker who was arrested by ICE agents as he left his immigration hearing last week. The asylum seeker has only been identified by his first name, Dylan, as his mother fears further retaliation from ICE. On the day of his arrest, she said agents ambushed Dylan in the courthouse lobby after he left his hearing. In the following days, Dylan was transferred to multiple immigration jails across four states, making it difficult for his lawyers to contact him. Dylan was attending high school in the Bronx, where he lived with his mom and his two younger siblings and worked as a part-time delivery driver. President Trump has pardoned Scott Jenkins, a former Virginia sheriff convicted on corruption charges, after undercover video showed he accepted over $75,000 in bribes. Jenkins is a longtime Trump supporter. On social media, Trump said Jenkins was the victim of an overzealous Biden Department of Justice, unquote. Meanwhile, Trump has fully pardoned the former reality show couple Todd and Julie Chrisley after they were sentenced to long prison terms for evading taxes and defrauding banks of more than $30 million. This comes as Trump loyalist Ed Martin has taken on a new role as the Justice Department's pardon attorney after failing to win Senate approval to become the District of Columbia's top prosecutor. Politico reports Martin spent his first week on the job reviewing pardon applications of January 6 insurrectionists, including Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes, seeking to have President Trump convert their commuted sentences into full pardons. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced Tuesday he's ended government guidance recommending healthy children and pregnant people receive COVID-19 vaccinations. Kennedy made the announcement in a video posted on X.
I couldn't be more pleased to announce that as of today, the COVID vaccine for healthy children and healthy pregnant women has been removed from the CDC recommended immunization schedule. We're now one step closer to realizing President Trump's promise to make America healthy again.
Despite Kennedy's announcement, the CDC did not publish any information about changes to its vaccine schedule, which recommends COVID shots for infants of 6 months or older. Kennedy appears to have entirely sidestepped the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, the CDC panel that normally handles such recommendations. The CDC is currently operating without an executive director. Kennedy's announcement is likely to put COVID vaccines out of the reach of millions of people because insurance companies will likely no longer pay for them. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists condemned the rollback of vaccine access, writing, quote, "The science has not changed. It's very clear that COVID infection during pregnancy can be catastrophic and lead to major disability," they wrote. Three Colorado public radio stations have joined National Public Radio in a lawsuit challenging President Trump's executive order seeking to bar public broadcasters from receiving congressionally appropriated funds. In a joint statement accompanying the lawsuit, the broadcasters write, quote, "This is not about politics. It's about principle. When the government tries to limit press freedom or control the flow of information, we have not only the right but the obligation to speak out and defend our rights that make independent journalism possible," unquote. This comes after the New York Times reported the lead producer of the documentary series American Masters insisted on removing a scene critical of President Trump from a documentary about the comic artist Art Spiegelman 2 weeks before it was set to air nationwide on public television stations. The series is produced by the WNET group of New York City public TV stations. In a statement, Art Spiegelman wrote, quote, "It's tragic and appalling that PBS and WNET are willing to become collaborators with the sinister forces trying to muzzle free speech," he said. The U.S. Supreme Court has declined to take up an appeal by indigenous advocates who are fighting to block the transfer of Oak Flat to Resolution Copper, which wants to turn the site in eastern Arizona, sacred to the San Carlos Apache Nation, into a massive copper mine. The justices left in place a lower court's decision that will allow the Trump administration to take the land and transfer it to Resolution Copper. Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote in a dissent that it was a, quote, "grievous mistake" not to take up the appeal. He wrote, quote, "Recognizing Oat Flat's significance, the government has long protected both the land and the Apache's access to it. No more. Now the government and a mining conglomerate want to turn Oak Flat into a massive hole in the ground," Justice Gorsuch wrote. And former New York Democratic Congressmember Charles Rangel died Monday. He was 94 years old. Rangel was a founding member of the Congressional Black Caucus, known as the Lion of Lenox Avenue by his Harlem District constituents. He served in the House for over four decades. Rangel became the first Black chair of the Ways and Means Committee in 2017 before stepping down from the position amidst an ethics scandal for violating House rules. Rangel was born in Harlem in 1930. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Coming up, from church sanctuaries to ICE detention, immigrant rights activist Jeanette Vizguerra speaks out from an immigration jail in Colorado 2 months after she was arrested. We'll air excerpts of Latino USA's interview with her and speak to the show's host who got into the jail, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us.
Cuando no me veas siente que vivo en tu lado izquierdo, que vivo en tu lado izquierdo. Cuando no me veas siente,
cuando no me veas siente, que vivo en tu lado izquierdo, que vivo en tu lado izquierdo. Cuando no me veas siente,
soy el viento que muerdo los cabellos de tu frente. Cuando no me veas siente que vivo en tu lado izquierdo,
que soy el viento que muerdo los cabellos de tu frente. Cuando no me veas siente.
Chiles Verdes by Radio Jarocho and Zanin Zeferino performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show looking at the case of Jeanette Vizguerra, a well-known immigrant rights activist, mother of four, detained in Denver in March. She's being jailed at the Aurora ICE Processing Center, operated by the private prison company Geo Group in Colorado. In 2009, Jeanette Vizguerra successfully fought deportation following a routine traffic stop. Then, in 2017, during the first Trump administration, she was targeted for deportation and took sanctuary in the Unitarian Church in Denver, living there with three of her young children. She received a stay of removal, but then upon its expiration in 2019, returned to sanctuary. She received additional deportation stays during the Biden administration, but those eventually expired. Her lawyers allege that Jeanette was detained in March in retaliation for speech that's protected under the First Amendment. Jeanette Vizguerra is a longtime activist who worked as an SEIU labor organizer, volunteered with the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition and the American Friends Service Committee, AFSC, and founded the activist organizations Dreamers Mothers in Action, Colorado, Abolish ICE Denver, and Sanctuary for All. In 2017, during the first Trump administration, I visited Jeanette Vizguerra at the First Unitarian Society Church in Denver, where she sought sanctuary, and talked to her.
Are you prepared for ICE to come in at any time?
Yes, we have an internal plan here at the church, and not only at this church, also at the church where Ingrid is, who is at the other church in Mountain View. She has been in sanctuary for over 3 months. Both churches are part of the Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition, and each church has its own emergency plan. I am also prepared. Before coming here, I prepared a family plan in case ICE were to go to my house. Part of the plan with my children was that one of them would be filming and the other one would be calling people from a list that I gave them. And here, we have a similar plan. So I am prepared, and so are the people here. We hope that Donald Trump will respect these spaces. It would look wrong from a moral standpoint if he came after mothers who are just fighting for their families.
That was Jeanette Vizguerra 8 years ago in 2017. Earlier this month, she was named one of this year's recipients of the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Award. It marks the first time the award's been given to someone in immigration detention. Jeanette Vizguerra recently spoke to the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, Latino USA host Mariana Hossa, in a rare interview on camera from inside the ICE jail. In a moment, we're going to play Jeanette Vizguerra in her own words. But first, we turn to Mariana Hossa, who's joining us from Austin, Texas. Maria, welcome back to Democracy Now! How did you get this interview? How often do you get to go into an ICE jail?
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, Juan from Austin. Look, when we got the news that we were going to be able to come inside the Aurora ICE Processing Center with a camera and a microphone, I couldn't believe it because I essentially have been banned from going inside immigrant detention facilities. Because I'm one of the few who has been documenting this since about 2010 and showing what these places actually look like and what the treatment is like for people being held. So when I heard that I was going to be allowed inside, of course, I immediately asked my producer what happened. It goes to the heart of Jeanette Vizguerra's case. Jeanette Vizguerra believes that she is not being held in immigrant detention because of her immigration status, but rather she is being held because of her words and because of her activism. And so what we understand is that when we made the request to come and interview her and we were expecting a denial, her lawyer said, if you deny Maria Hinojosa and Latino USA to come in and interview Jeanette Vizguerra, we can make this part of our case, arguing on her First Amendment rights. It was an absolute checkmate situation where they had to essentially let us in with cameras, with microphones, to see Jeanette Vizguerra in the Aurora detention facility and see Amy and Juan. You know, I've been visiting detention facilities for years, right? And I've been in maximum security men's prisons for years. I had to walk through, Amy and Juan, I had to walk through 9 prison doors in order to get to where Jeanette was being seated inside a windowless room where we were going to do the interview. When I go into a maximum security men's prison, there are 2 doors, 2 prison doors. And yet, in an ICE detention facility run by privately held GEO Group, where majority of the people being held there are not criminals, they are treated worse than in a maximum security men's prison. It was shocking. But I will say that Jeanette Vizguerra, though she is sick, she told us she has a stomach virus. She says many people are sick inside the detention facility. She appeared firm in our interview. It lasted 1 hour.
And Maria, how would you compare Jeanette's case to that of someone like Mahmoud Khalil, who was detained over his Palestinian rights activism, both clearly being targeted because of their speech?
Jeanette Vizguerra says that she is the Mahmoud Khalil of the immigrant rights and sanctuary rights movement. She believes that just like Mahmoud Khalil from Columbia University, where I'm a professor at Barnard College, she believes that he is being held and targeted because of his activism. She says the same thing is happening to me. I'm being held and targeted because of my activism. By the way, somebody senior in the comms department from the Department of Homeland Security said in a tweet after Jeanette had been taken, said actually in a tweet, we will come and get you even if you have been named to Time Magazine's 100 Most Important People. We will come and get you. So she absolutely feels like she is being targeted. The ICE agent, one of the ICE agents who took her when she was apprehended in Colorado, said to her, we got you. And he, according to Jeanette, he had her social media on his phone. So Jeanette argues, her lawyers argue, that she has absolutely been targeted by this administration.
Maria, we're going to hear Jeanette describe this situation in her own words, in her conversation with you. We're talking to Maria Hinojosa, the host of Latino USA. Let's go to an extended excerpt of that conversation that Jeanette Vizquera had with you inside the privately run immigration jail in Aurora, Colorado.
Did you imagine that you would end up being the very specific target of a new Trump administration?
I knew that if, well, in fact, many people, colleagues and friends warned me, Jeanette, you're going to need to stay quiet, have a plan for yourself, don't make noise because they're going to come after you. So what happened? Trump won. And the first time when he signed the executive action removing sensitive locations, which of course I had helped create with the Sanctuary Foundation, the Sanctuary Coalition, and I was a national sanctuary leader, the media started reaching out to me. And I was like, should I do it or not? Thinking about it, right? But at the same time, I sat my whole family down and I told them, we have to have a plan because things are going to happen. And
so when in your head, when you were asking yourself, lo hago o no lo hago, do I speak out or do I not speak out after Trump had been reelected?
I wondered about that, but then the first raid happened. I already had this feeling that something was in the air, that something was going on.
Was it a feeling of fear?
I always have that kind of intuition that something is going to happen, that something is coming. I spoke with my colleagues and I told them about the plan just in case. The day before, because I went to a march that Sunday, right before I was arrested, I made a call to the community. In fact, I was able to give one last interview where I said we are living in difficult times and that we also needed to have an escalation protocol, a way to better protect our community.
How many days after you made that speech on that Sunday, saying they are escalating, we have to escalate too as activists. How many days after that were you detained?
El día siguiente.
The next day.
Do you believe, Jeanette, that you specifically are being targeted because of your activism, because you speak out?
Yes, and I found out that same day I was detained because, well, the officer placed his phone down like this. And when he did, the screen lit up. And there it was, my social media, and the photo of my husband. I said to him, why are you monitoring my social media? He said, it's public. And another one responded, we finally got you.
So what do you think the Trump administration...
They are trying to say that they have the power, that they have the resources, and that they will deport anyone, not just me, but anyone who is inconvenient. They want to send a message to other activists like me that they will suffer the same consequences. They want to silence us. They want to erase us from the map. But I've said it before and I will say it again. It doesn't matter where I am, whether I'm here or in my country, because I will have influence on a binational level. It doesn't matter if I'm not physically here. I have my seeds here.
Do you believe that you are here because of political persecution?
I am a political prisoner. I never thought I would become a political prisoner in the United States, a country where laws are supposedly respected, where freedom of speech is protected, where one was supposedly has the right to speak out, to protest, to denounce injustice. That is what I am, a political prisoner. And not just me, there are others too because of their activism who are imprisoned right now.
Do you believe that you are the Mahmoud Khalil of the immigrant rights movement?
We are in the same situation. We are in the same situation, and there are many of us.
when you say the words, I am a political prisoner, tell me what's going on for you as you say those words about yourself right now in the year 2025.
In 2025,
we are going back so many years. Like I say, we're heading toward a dictatorship because they want to silence those of us who are raising our voices, those of us who are revolutionizing movements.
You say that you are here because you're fighting for your First Amendment right. You say that you won't be quiet, no matter where you are, what country or what place that you're being detained. So, in fact, what is your message to the world right now?
My message to everyone who might watch this interview is that no leader who's making change will have a life free of suffering. All leaders suffer. All leaders face attempts to be silenced. All leaders face efforts to make us disappear. But thanks to everything we do, we achieve enormous change out there. And right now, the message to the community is, the people save the people. If you remain silent, we will not have change.
That's Jeanette Vizguerra speaking to Latino USA host Maria Hinojosa. They are inside an ICE jail in Aurora, Colorado, run by GEO Group. Maria Hinojosa is still with us, speaking to us from Austin, Texas. Maria, she talks about all leaders suffer. In fact, in the rest of the interview, and we'll link to it at democracynow.org that you've posted on YouTube on video, and we'll link to your Latino USA piece for radio. In the rest of it, she breaks down, Jeanette breaks down, as she talks about her four children, her seeds. Can you talk about her strength and what she faces?
You know, Amy, it was really something to witness being inside the detention center. I actually call them detention camps. Center is just too neutral of a word. And to realize that even inside the detention facility, Jeanette continues to be an organizer. So people are coming to her and they're asking her, what should I do if I'm sick? How, you know, can I get in touch with this person, make a call? She told me that the phones oftentimes are simply not working, which is extraordinary for people being held and not having access to phones. So inside the detention camp, she is still helping people. And Jeanette is a consummate organizer and an activist. And journalists like us who do these interviews, we understand the amount of work it takes to be an activist and an organizer. It's not simple. And so oftentimes in the interview, when I would ask Jeanette about her personal feelings, she would start talking about other people who were in a difficult situation, other people who she's helped. And Amy and Juan, I had to kind of ask her more than once to talk about herself. How does she feel being held away from her four children, three of whom were born in the United States? How does she feel emotionally? And at the end of the interview, Amy, Jeanette did something which she rarely does. She does not like to show this part of herself, but she cried. And she told me that it is incredibly lonely to be inside and to have all of this pressure and to know that the whole world is watching her. We were able to see a moment of vulnerability because al final de cuentas, ultimately, Jeanette Vizguerra is a mom who is an activist and who lives in Colorado for 30 years. So she's a human being, and that was part of our intention, was to hear from Jeanette and see her not just as a political prisoner, but as a mom and as a human being.
And Maria, I wanted to ask you about the broader issue of the last few months as immigration raids have been going on, especially agents of ICE picking people up in outside of courthouses and in various cities, and the advertising campaign that Homeland Security has been mounting, urging undocumented immigrants to self-deport.
You know, Juan, I look at my Instagram feed and first thing in the morning, of course. And what do you see? You see stories about a baby, a four-year-old who could be dead in a matter of days if she's removed from this country. You see the story of a high schooler, I believe his name is Dylan, who went in, was following the law and the process legally, and then is taken right outside of a courthouse in New York City. You see the stories of men who are climbing, undocumented immigrants who are climbing trees in order to escape ICE, who are fully in, like, you know, in almost military garb, covering their faces. What are we supposed to call this when you have masked agents with no identification taking people off streets and farms and corners and courthouses? You know, the question is for those people who voted for Donald Trump, are you satisfied? Does this make you feel like we are a better country because you're seeing this? This is not sustainable. And what Jeanette told me, and kind of the new movement in terms of the sanctuary movement, which I've been covering since the 1980s, the new movement, the sanctuary movement, is not behind closed doors in a church. The new movement, the sanctuary movement, is people of conscience with American citizenship who can go and take the sanctuary movement to the streets. And this is where our country is going, Juan. It is a very desperate place, but then you see people like Jeanette Vizguerra, who she's holding her head high, even though she is in a very, very challenging situation in this ICE detention camp.
And I wanted to ask you about, related news, reports emerging of Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, earning at least $5,000 in fees for his consulting work for the private prison company Geo Group, which operates at least 16 jails or detention centers nationwide, a key contractor in carrying out Trump's mass deportations. Homan has been at the head of Trump's raids, mass detention, deportation agenda, and was acting director of ICE in the first Trump administration. And yes, Jeanette Vizguerra is being held in a Geo Group jail.
And Tom Homan also served under Barack Obama. So Tom Homan has been around for a long time. You know, I think that people who watch and listen to Democracy Now! Are clear about the fact that you have privately run prisons. So you have a private prison industry that runs prisons and now actually is making their money, millions upon millions of dollars, by keeping people in a detention bed. That is how they make their profit. And if mass incarceration, because of activists, has decreased a little bit, mass detention is on the rise. The money that is going to be made by GEO, by CoreCivic, which used to be known as Corrections Corporation of America, they don't want people to know that they are in the business of detention, so they just got rid of that name and call themselves CoreCivic. The American people need to understand that profit is being made by keeping a person in a detention bed. And how do they feel about this? And again, not just Tom Homan, but thousands of people are making money, making big bucks off of this. And this is totally distressing. I'll give you one scene from the detention facility in Aurora. You walk into the entrance room, the kind of lobby area. Now, GEO is a billion-dollar company. You should have seen the pictures that they had on the wall in the little lobby area, trying to show that they are a great facility. You would expect from a multi-million-dollar corporation that they would have the best photographs about the best treatment that they're offering. It was disgusting. They had a photograph of a wall of phones and said, expert communications available. They had a picture of half of a basketball court with all walls and just a skylight this big. And they were like, facilities for, you know, gymnastics and working out. It was horrific, Amy. And so this is what most people cannot get a chance to see because they're privately run. And they can just say, we're not going to let any reporters in ever. And they can do that.
Maria Hinojosa, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, founder of Futuro Media, host of Latino USA. We'll link to the video and audio of your exclusive interview with the jailed immigrant rights activist Jeanette Vizguerra. We'll also link to our interviews with Jeanette. The first time she went into sanctuary in 2017 in the Unitarian Church in Denver. And we will continue to cover this story. Coming up, the Trump administration's reached an agreement with Boeing to drop criminal charges over the fatal crashes of two 737 MAX jets. We'll speak to the mother of one of the victims. Plus, we look at what's being called the Mount Everest of corruption. Stay with us.
Won't you take me to that place? Sense of time where I escape my fate when I feel the most alive. Won't you play my favorite song?
Song by Sing Kane, performing in our studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We look now at a reported deal between the Trump administration and aerospace giant Boeing that allowed the company to pay $1.1 billion to avoid criminal prosecution for the two deadly crashes of the company's 737 MAX jet in 2018 in Indonesia, and then in 2019 in Ethiopia, which killed together all 346 people on the two planes. The non-prosecution agreement with the Justice Department was announced Friday. Under the deal, Boeing would pay fines and fund safety improvements and provide an additional $445 million for crash victims' families. The DOJ said in a court filing, Boeing would also agree to an independent third-party compliance consultant, and the company's board would be required to meet with families of the victims. The DOJ claims about 110 victims' families supported the deal, while a lawyer for other families promised to urge a judge to reject the deal, saying in a statement, quote, "This kind of non-prosecution deal is unprecedented and obviously wrong for the deadliest corporate crime in U.S. history." For more, we're joined by Nadja Milleron. She is an aviation safety advocate whose daughter, Samia Rose Stumo, was killed along with 156 others when Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302, a Boeing 737 MAX, crashed in 2019 in Ethiopia. Nadja, welcome back to Democracy Now! I should also say you're the niece of Ralph Nader and that your daughter was the grandniece of Ralph Nader. Talk about what your feelings are about this deal.
We have a corporate criminal that committed the deadliest crime in U.S. history, killing 346 people because of their fraud, lying to the FAA. And so that corporate criminal wrote down a confession as part of the original DPA, the Deferred Prosecution Agreement. And they said, yes, we did this. We lied to the FAA. And then the judge said, and those lies, that fraud killed the 346 people. And so there would be no trial of any consequence. It would take a couple of minutes because you already have a confession. So why are they letting off this corporate criminal who continues to do the same behavior? The reason they violated the DPA is because They had so many violations against regulations and laws, and they were misrepresenting the safety of the plane. And then just a few days before the deal ended, their term under the DPA, the Deferred Prosecution Agreement, the Alaska Air blowout happened. And that showed the world, and the Department of Justice could not deny it, that Boeing was not taking care of their business. They were continuing their behavior to risk human life just as they had done before. So we have a chance now, and we want the American people to stand up and say what it is that they believe, that they need to be defended by the Department of Justice, that the Department of Justice needs to take this to prosecution, that they should not give a pass to this corporate criminal, because Boeing is continuing to risk people's lives. And on June 23rd, the Department of Justice will presumably make a motion to dismiss before the judge in Fort Worth, Texas, Judge Reed O'Connor. And then we hope the judge will deny it. But the Department of Justice could always change their course before that time, and they should be urged to by the American people. And also the judge can stand up for our population and passengers and crew on aircraft. And in fact, we did appeal a previous ruling of his to the Fifth Circuit in New Orleans. And the Fifth Circuit said to Judge Reed O'Connor, you look out for the public interest. You can do this. You can deny deals. And he did deny the first deal that the Department of Justice tried to make with Boeing. He did deny it and say, no, this is not good. So they came up with a worse one. So hopefully he will deny it, and please everybody speak up. Because what Pam Bondi is not seeing is that she or her loved ones can die on these defective planes. If you allow a company to keep making defective planes and to have no accountability or responsibility or consequences for their murders of all these people, then they're going to keep going. And you can also die, and your loved ones can also die on that. She's not immune from that. So it's really important to hold Boeing accountable.
And Nadia, the Department of Justice said in its filing on Friday that 110 of the families of victims either supported the deal or did not oppose it. What's your understanding of how the families of the victims are shaping up on this question?
So many families in Indonesia never received previous payments from Boeing. So their lawyers or whoever was in charge of those payments, they took the money. So maybe those families are thinking that this is the only option for them to receive money, but that's not the case. Judge Reed O'Connor, in adjudicating this case, can demand that Boeing pay them money. So, and that all should be straightened out. Whatever the reason is that they, in a second criminal action, didn't receive their money that was due them, you know, that should be corrected. But it shouldn't be corrected this way by giving Boeing a pass for their crime. In other words, what's happening here, imagine somebody uses a machine gun and sprays down a bunch of people and kills them. Okay, then they go to those victim families and say, we'll pay you money if you agree to a deal where I, as the murderer, don't get prosecuted. That doesn't make any sense. That's not a justice system. We shouldn't allow that.
Nadia, before we go,
most of the families agree that Boeing should be prosecuted. The 2/3 of the families agree.
Nadia, before we go, for our radio audience, you're holding a picture of Samia next to your face, and behind you is pictures of so many of the victims. I wanted you just to remind us who Samia Rose Stumo was, why she was on that plane, one of so many stories, what, more than 300 people's stories who died on those two MAX planes.
Well, most of the people on the Ethiopian plane were humanitarians, and Samia was a humanitarian going to Uganda. She was a happy warrior. She believed that data was power, and she knew that she was tracking what the Gates Foundation, how their expenditures were happening in Uganda, and whether that money was really going to help real people. Samia would have saved so many people's lives through healthcare in her lifetime, and we miss her terribly.
Well, Nadia Milleron, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Aviation safety advocate whose daughter, Samia Rose Stumo, was killed along with 156 others on Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302, the Boeing 737 MAX crashed in 2019. In fact, Nadia Milleron ran for Congress from Massachusetts and is running again. I want to bring into this conversation Rob Weissman, co-president of Public Citizen, who said this deal is, quote, one of the most shocking lapses of criminal enforcement against a major corporation in memory. The Trump administration touts how it's tough on crime, but when it comes to the world's most powerful institutions, it's an all-time patsy. Rob Weissman, we also want to talk to you about the budget and that crypto dinner, and we only have a few minutes, but first respond to the DOJ's deal, holding Boeing not criminally responsible for the crashes.
Right. Well, just to be clear about what happened, as Nadia was saying, Boeing entered a deal at the end of the first Trump administration, which itself was a sweetheart deal. They promised not to break the law again. They did. And now the reward is a deal that's even softer than the original one that they entered into with the first Trump administration. It is unconscionable. And it's really useful to contrast this treatment of Boeing with a conversation you had in the first segment about what this administration is doing with undocumented people in this country. So they're criminalizing everyday people trying to get by. And they are historically soft on corporate criminals who are actually powerful and killing people. It is the most extreme contrast that imaginable, is the greatest abuse imaginable of the criminal justice system. And it's what we're going to be in for the next 3.5 years, unless the people rise up and demand something really different.
Well, Rob, I want to go to another issue about what's being called the Mount Everest of corruption. How President Trump is personally profiting off the presidency through various crypto schemes. Last week, Trump hosted a private dinner at his Virginia Golf Club for the 220 top spenders on his Trump meme coin. That's the one that has the dollar sign, then Trump. Altogether, the dinner attendees spent close to $400 million combined to gain access to Trump. I think it's estimated it was about $1 million per plate dinner. This is Oregon Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley speaking at a protest outside.
This is like the Mount Everest of corruption. Now, our founders were very worried about people buying influence with our corruption because they knew you can't have we the people government if it's government's being sold to others.
This comes as the Trump family is continuing to expand its holdings in cryptocurrencies. On Tuesday, the parent company of Trump's Truth Social platform announced plans to raise $2.5 billion to invest in Bitcoin. The move could make the Trumps one of the largest corporate holders of Bitcoin. So, Rob Weissman, if you can comment on all of this, you were outside that crypto dinner.
Yeah, I was there with the senator. Today, J.D. Vance is going to be in Las Vegas talking to a crypto convention. The two Trump sons are going to be addressing that convention also. There is a swirl of money going around that has no precedent in all of American history. Trump and his family have estimated to have made $300 million or more dollars on crypto just in the first few months of the presidency. They're likely to leave the four-year term having made billions cashing in on scams and frauds. And it's not just that it's unethical. This corruption is part of an overall authoritarian mission. It is part of the non-prosecution system where corporations are paying money or sliding money to Trump through his crypto to get excused from enforcement actions, including one of the biggest crypto holders in the country. It's part of the authoritarian crackdown on immigration, where we see Geo Group that we referenced before trying to get money from the reconciliation bill we're going to talk about in a second, which also previously employed Pam Bondi, the attorney general, as a consultant and lobbyist. There's this combination of the corruption, the crackdown on undocumented people, the denial of speech, and the massive giveaways to corporations. That is all of a single story of this oligarchy and authoritarian move of the Trump administration.
And Rob, there was a related issue in terms of the pardons that Trump has been issuing. Yeah. The latest New York Times report shows that he pardoned Paul Walczak, a nursing home executive who had pleaded guilty to tax crimes, and shortly after, Walczak's mother attended a $1 million per person fundraising event at Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate that promised face-to-face time with Trump. Here's a guy who promised to drain the swamp and is actually putting the White House up for sale.
It's exactly what it seems. There's a trucking company that bought some of the Trump meme. They didn't buy enough, as it turned out, to get to the dinner. But they were explicit in their filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission that they were buying the currency to get access to the president to try to influence policy. That's happening in broad daylight right now in Washington, D.C.
And going back to this issue of the Bitcoin, the reduced regulations on the Bitcoin industry assure that all this money that's being made once Trump leaves office, very little of it will be able to be traced. Isn't it? That's the big problem with Bitcoin, that there's no ability of any regulatory agency to follow where the money goes.
Yeah, despite all the talk about how it's going to transform the economy and rain wealth down on everybody, its single useful function has turned out to be for money laundering. Its other useful function is for scammers and grifters like the Trump family to manipulate markets, get rich. But when they're getting rich, it is at the expense of losers. So there's millions of losers for every few winners in the crypto game. Trump is rigging the rules to make sure he's on the winning side. But regular people are going to be hurt. And as this system expands and Congress is poised to let it expand right now, it's really in danger of infecting the overall banking system. So instead of being a small, weird grift that's affecting millions of people, it may be something that actually introduces risk into the overall banking and financial system. And that itself is a product of all the money that crypto has spent on congressional races, including buying off some Democrats who are now poised to vote for a bill legalizing some crypto operations that should not otherwise be legal.
You have in New York this developing story of two Bitcoin bros arrested for kidnapping and torturing an Italian man in Soho for weeks, holding him, torturing him to get his password. But I want to ask you finally about the budget. The GOP passing Trump's sweeping budget bill that gives massive tax breaks to the rich while slashing spending for Medicaid, nutritional assistance, subsidies for clean energy, triggering massive cuts to Medicare. Rob, as we wrap up, how do you fit this into the level of the Mount Everest of corruption? What's taking place? Now, that bill is before the Senate.
Right. So this bill, if it moves forward, is going to be the biggest transfer of wealth in American history from regular people to the super rich. As you said, it's going to be the expense of clean energy, at the expense of giving billions of dollars to Pentagon contractors, including potentially Elon Musk, at the expense of billions of dollars for a police state immigration system, and at the expense of health care for millions of people. Why is it happening? It's happening because of a corrupt political system where Republicans are trying to pay off their donors. The most important thing for people to know about this, though, is it is not a done deal. There is a chance to stop this reconciliation package, this tax and budget package, from moving forward. The Republicans are split among themselves about how to do it. And if there's enough public pressure, this thing can be defeated. And it absolutely has to be defeated, because if it succeeds, it's going to throw 14 million people off of health care, deny food assistance to millions more, and really make this country a less fair and just place with painful consequences for many millions of Americans.
And Rob, what do you advise? What does Public Citizen advise as the what Americans concerned about what is happening should be doing today?
Well, this is not happening as fast as it may seem. The reconciliation thing, this tax and budget bill, it's going to take months to get sorted out as the Republicans fight among themselves over tax breaks for whom or how vicious they want to be with their health care cuts. So there's an opportunity for people to mobilize. So all the regular things of calling and emailing your members of Congress make a difference. And that's true if you've got a Democratic member of Congress or a Republican member of Congress. There are going to be big national mobilizations around this. There's going to be a big national mobilization under the banner of No Kings on June 14th. Those things, turning people out on the street, they've stopped the last effort in the first Trump administration to slash health care, and they can do it again this time. If we put enough people on the streets, put enough pressure on Congress, it will make a difference on this one.
June 14th is the day there'll be a military parade in Washington costing something like $20 million, President Trump's 79th birthday.
Same day.
That does it for our show. Rob Weissman, co-president of Public Citizen. Special thanks to Ariel Goodman. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.